if alien life forms are on Earth, they're making themselves known to us. Why? Why is that? And we need to figure that out. We need to understand why these beings, they do exist and they are coming to Earth. Why are they here? There's a lot of lore from 10, 20,000 years ago that it was actually aliens that came and protected people from the floods. If you think of every religion has a flood story and they survived it. And some of those religions believe it was a heavenly being that did it. When you think of a heavenly being today, what do you think of? Aliens.
What is going on, guys? We have an awesome episode today with friend of the podcast and former Special Forces Military Intelligence Officer, Kervin Oquin. We talk about everything from the UFO and UAP phenomenon, the Mexican government showcasing alien bodies on its congressional floor, Prigozhin's death in the Ukraine war, civil wars happening all around Africa, and much more. So if you guys enjoy, remember to subscribe and like the video if you're on YouTube. And if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave the podcast a 5-star review and follow so you don't miss any future episodes. All right, well, we can jump into it, Kervin. Good to finally have you in person.
So it's so good to be here. Thanks, man.
Pumped up for it. We have a lot to talk about because a lot has happened over the past few months. some of the stuff I want to talk about today, obviously going over updates with what's going on in Ukraine, but Prigozhin's dead. That's outrageous.
Crazy, right?
Crazy out of nowhere. We got what's happening in Africa with Sudan and everything, which is also... I think that's an area that people are not paying attention enough to. And then probably the biggest, Mexico unveiled aliens in the Congress.
Yeah, we can get into
that. I'd love to start off with that. Let's start off light.
Let's do it.
But what do you think about that?
I mean, did you see the actual aliens that they presented?
I've been seeing those for years now. It's weird that they just finally decided to put them up front in Mexico. And I was like, I know... There's a lot of controversy with the whole idea of them, but I was interested to get your take on it.
Yeah, and so and then the person that they got to that said that he had these alien figures, he's a controversial figure. He has actually been known to be a conspiracy theorist and has apologized for putting out information that wasn't real. And then when you look at the figures... To me, they look like a fifth grade papier-mâché project for a science fair. Now, that's not to say, that's not to shut out the conversation, right? Should we be having a conversation about do aliens exist? I mean, 90% positive that yes. I'm not narcissistic enough to believe that there's not something else out there, that we're the only... beings with some intelligence in this entire universe, galaxy, multiple galaxies ahead. But the real conversation we should be having, I'm really impressed with Andrew Bustamante, who brought this up, was his thinking on it was not, you know, do aliens exist? We're like, well, that's pretty much a given that there's something else out there. The real question is, have they come to us? Have they presented themselves to us? And then what has that done? Because that's really what the intelligence community would be looking at. That's really what the U.S. government would be looking at, is what are we getting if aliens do exist and they're coming to Earth to talk to us? And what he has said was, look at from the 1970s to today, how far we have advanced as a civilization technologically. Could we have done that without the help of an outside force? Maybe, but it's more likely that an outside force had come to us and had shown us what, hey, this is what the internet looks like. Without saying this is the internet, this is how you build certain things. And then the increase of alien observances from Air Force personnel that are flying around, that could be a probable reason for that is they've given us all this information. well, now they want to see what we're going to do with it. Is that going to lead us to nuclear annihilation? Or are we going to become more personalized? Are we going to reach out and become what we would say more human and be with people and be nice to people? That is what they would, that's what he would say they want.
In your view, do you think, how accurate do you think that is? Because I mean, it's so interesting. Some of these technologies can so rapidly, I just did a video on how AI is almost the new nuclear weapon that can, it can quickly impact how the world, how wars are fought, everything. It's going to change so quickly. And we really, the cat's out of the bag with that.
Yeah.
You know, how do you view, so you, do you agree with that sentiment?
So I don't fully agree. So I still don't think that we have been visited by an alien space, by an alien race or anything like that, just because is the, so it would have to be so far, or it had to be so close to Earth that at the point that we're at right now, we could probably view it through the satellites and you know, the kind of technology that we have right now. We could probably view that, hey, this is a new civilization somewhere else. So I don't think we've been visited yet, but I do love the conversation. So there are conversations of an ancient civilization that were visited by aliens that helped them. There was a recent report. The human race was almost annihilated thousands of years ago. There was a, I believe it was this cold spell that went through Earth. So it was an ice age. And the human race was on the, they were about to be extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And we survived it. We just don't know how. Do I think that an alien race could have come here and protected humans? Yes. But then you have to realize, so when you go in with the thought of like an intelligence-based reaction to something, and when I say intelligence, I don't mean intelligent, just sort of this intelligence cycle. The main question is why? Why would aliens care about the human race? I don't see anything within the human race that would lead me to believe that an alien culture would care what we do. Honestly, aliens would want all of us to be annihilated so they could come to a planet that has a lot of things that could help them survive. Or they could mine this whole planet. I think that would be something that an alien race would want to do. Come here, mine the planets, just like NASA just got a pod back from an asteroid so that they could see what's in the asteroid, what minerals are in the asteroid that we could use to improve our technologies. That's something that if you're thinking an alien race is much like, has evolved much like the human race, that's what they would want. They would want a total annihilation of the human race. Come on here, come on to Earth, and then mine the Earth for all the resources that we have.
What do you think about the idea that aliens could be artificial intelligence? I had a professor on just recently that's his vision of what alien life would truly be, is just advanced artificial intelligence. Obviously, much more advanced than what we have now, but advanced artificial intelligence nonetheless.
Yeah, and this is a conversation I had with one of the members of the band Bayside. He's full in to the, like, aliens are just the technology. And it would make sense if you think of how we as humans view religion and the afterlife and things like that. So we're plugged in to this Earth. It's artificial. And we're just going about our daily lives the way we decided before we knew who we were. And with that, you have all these different, you know, think of the different religions. And so you have, you have a heaven, right? A lot of religions have a paradise, a nirvana, a heaven. And what would that look like? Well, in this scenario, it would look like you're done with who you are here in what we would call the simulation. And from that point, you would go from the simulation to heaven. And then you have reincarnation. And then reincarnation would be, so I'm done being outside the simulation. I want to get back into the simulation, just like you're playing Sims or something of that nature. And you build your character, you yourself are your character, and you're placed back on Earth. That definitely to me sounds like reincarnation. And I could very much see that. But what I like to talk about is not usually what's actually the actual experience. So I love the conversation about aliens being AI, aliens being the technology, and they're just giving us the answers to what's going on. But to have an advanced race that can go, you know, millions of light years away in an instant, to me, does not seem plausible. So that's where I stop on that one. But looking at technology, like I said, from 1970s to today, we've advanced so far. We have to figure out why that was. Is it because we just educated ourselves so much? Or is there an outside force that's helping with that? And why is that important to the United States government? Well, it's important because where are we getting our information to create weapons, to create defense systems? As far as the U.S. is, as far as the U.S. government's concerned, they need to know what other countries are doing, as far, especially adversarial countries are doing, as far as defense systems, as far as missile systems. Are they getting information from alien life that improves on their systems more than it does on our systems? So that's why we're having this conversation within the Pentagon about, did this really happen, and what's going on? As of right now, I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe that that we have 100% been, you know, talked to by aliens or visited by an alien life form. Like I said, I love the conversation. I just don't, working in facts and logic, I'd have to see more before I can go to that side of it.
So some of these devices, or not devices, but ships, plane, whatever you want to call them, we've seen have done things that, at least right now, our current level of physics would just be impossible. In your view, where does that fall? Is it possibly that it's black ops operations? We don't want to release that we have these technologies? Or is it the opposite, where you think that there might be someone else with these technologies that the U.S. is currently worried about?
So I know for a fact, if it was technology that the U.S. was developing and didn't want it out, they would not release it. And if it was getting released at a, you know, it's at a classified level and now it's getting released to the public, that would definitely be called what we call close hold. We would want to keep that because we don't want to get into adversarial hands. But in looking at the videos that you talked of, and there's a lot of videos of what's called the Tic Tac, and I have seen those videos. I have seen those videos. Well, I've been a part of those videos personally. We run an overt anti-Russian aggression mission in Poland, and one of our UAVs was following what looked like the Tic Tac. Now, we made a copy of this video just to analyze it further because somebody came in and they were very intrigued by it. And we started to analyze the video that was going on. And what we found was that a lot of factors came into play. The sensor hit the water, which then reflected by, you know, the sun and all these things. It made sort of an image on the video. Now, this is just a personal video that we had watched, that we looked at, so I don't know all of the other videos and what was analyzed in those. But in this particular one, it was evident to us that the light reflecting off of the sun into the water was then reflecting up and making this tic-tac figure. And when the sensor would move, the camera would move, that's when you saw this tic-tac kind of move in a direction that, in a speed and direction that you was just physically unable to do by human measures. And so at first glance, it looks very compelling that this is an alien aircraft. But upon further analysis, we kind of saw, well, okay, these other features. And I think that is where we need to stand as the human race, is to analyze the information and then form logical explanations for these things. Now, is that always going to work? No, you're not going to have logical explanations for everything. Those are the things we need to research and figure out, you know, what is going on. And then I think the question then would be, why is it important? And it goes back to that, if alien life forms are on Earth trying to, or not even trying to contact us, but they're making themselves known to us, why? Why is that? And we need to figure that out. We need to understand why these beings, if they do exist and they are coming to Earth, why are they here? There's a lot of lore in, you know, from 10, 20,000 years ago that it was actually aliens that came and protected people from the floods. If you think of every religion has a flood story, and they survived it. And some of those religions believe it was a heavenly being that did it. Well, when you think of a heavenly being today, what do you think of? Aliens. I mean, you think of something from outer space that comes here. That's very plausible. You know, if you're thinking logically, well, yeah, that could definitely... It's so logical that some within the science community believe that Earth was planted with human DNA from an alien life form. And that's how we exist today. That's how logical we think that is, even within the science community.
I've seen a lot of people like Randall Carlson, very famed for that. But a lot of times he says that the reason that his ideas, that what we were just talking about, doesn't get any notoriety is there's a little bit of animosity in the scientific community.
Yeah.
Do you see that not only with the just general people within education, whatever it might be, but the U.S. government also having a hard time wanting to acknowledge a lot of these things? Because if we're so undergunned in these situations, how do you admit that to the populace too?
Yeah, I mean, so let's start there. If the U.S. government just admits that, yeah, we knew it this whole time, you're talking about a revolt from a large percentage of people. It's not the whole population, but a large percentage of people will then go, so you lied about that. What else are you lying about? And then continue down that rabbit hole. And the U.S. government is scared of that. Unfortunately, the U.S. government is scared of the people sometimes, and that they're going to have, this is the whole reason, and you see it in every movie that's created about aliens, right? The U.S. government can't confirm it because the people would just go crazy and stuff. No, it's because the people would want more answers. It wouldn't stop with, yeah, aliens exist. They're going to want more answers, and there's going to be more questions. And listen, every government, they just have power and they want to keep power. The way to keep power is to not have people questioning what you're doing. So they can't just have them continue to ask those questions. Now then, on the flip side of that, in what you were saying, so as far as, let's talk about why the U.S. government is using it now, you know, why the Pentagon has said, we're going to have those discussions and we're going to talk about it. And I do think some of that has to do with the hit that the government has taken, the intelligence community has taken recently, because it was found out that there were tons of clandestine operations that have gone out that people didn't know about. And the government said, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. And then it's come out that, yeah, that actually was happening. Look at what's going on with the CIA. So within the intelligence community, when you classify something, you have 25 years to keep that classified. After that 25, so well, it's all depending on what the classification is, but this is, we're talking about top secret stuff. If this is going on, this is top secret, you've got many caveats with that. So at that point, it becomes 25 years that that stays classified. Up to that 25-year point, now you can reevaluate it and maybe extend that classification. If you don't do that, it's automatically declassified and for public knowledge. Now, the CIA has gotten into a lot of trouble, I would say, because of that, because of the things that they did in the 60s and 70s that the some people within the U.S. said that the CIA was doing, and it was making them go crazy, you know, giving them LSD, forcing them to do things they didn't want to do, all clandestine, you know, covert operations. And people were scared, confused, and they were trying to come out. And 80s, 90s, they were told, you're wrong, the CIA's not doing this. And now, 2020, 2021, we're starting to see this stuff come out. And the people are going, so you lied about that because that was covert, clandestine. You didn't want to tell us. What else are you hiding? And we don't want to wait anymore. We don't want to wait the 25 years to figure out what the government is hiding from us. If you go back and look at what the CIA did, especially with LSD, they were microdosing people without their knowledge.
Can you explain that kind of MK Ultra project a little bit too, just so if people don't know about it?
Yeah, so that project was to see the effects of psychedelics on the human population. And so the reason they did it was to see how that would affect the enemy if they needed to use it. And so they rounded up a bunch of people. I say rounded up, that sounds like herding cattle, but they asked people to just come hang out and stuff like that, and they started microdosing them without their knowledge. And people started going crazy, having hallucinations. And I don't think what people think is, for some people, when you take LSD or even cocaine, for some people, it changes your mental capacity completely. And so now these people without their knowledge were taking LSD, and their entire mental capacity was changed. So they became new people. Their friends didn't see them as the same person anymore, and it ruined their entire life. And they tried to blame the CIA, and the U.S. government said it wasn't us. The CIA said, that's not us. We didn't do it. And just recently, we started talking about it.
Wasn't Ted Kaczynski part of that as well?
Ted Kaczynski, a lot of like what you would find with what we would consider, so let me try to find a right word. Well, the wrong word is what we would say crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't crazy. They were just experiencing things on a different level because of what the CIA did. And that led to things like the Unabomber, things like, now not directly, but the Oklahoma City bombing. And so you get a lot of people. It does not surprise me that a lot of people who later on did some terrible screwed up things were because of MK Ultra, because of what the CIA was doing to American people. They would say, well, they volunteered for it, but they had no idea what they were volunteering for.
Did you see recently that former Secret Service agent that was on the detail with JFK coming forward, talking a little bit about that magic bullet?
Yeah, so that is a very, it's a prominent talk right now because you have RFK Jr. who is I guess he's going to run as an independent because the Democratic Party's not going to let him run as a primary candidate. And that's nothing against the Biden administration. That's just what we do in this country. If you are the president, typically in modern times, you are just going to run as the next president of the United States until you have two terms and then you're done doing that. But I am very intrigued with what Robert Kennedy Jr. is talking about because he is bringing up what you talked about, the magic bullet, things that happened in Texas with JFK. Do I think that that could still be a secret if the CIA was actually involved in it? I don't, just because of, like I said, that 25-year gap. So at that point, you can look at it again. Even Trump said while he was president, he wanted to release more about the JFK assassination. And we don't have a smoking gun in the JFK assassination. There's all kinds of theories. I would say to keep the theories going and try to base it off of facts and logic to come up with, you know, what really happened in that situation.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things we'll probably never know about because it's just going to constantly keep pushing it back.
Yeah, and what's the one organization that can hide all of that stuff? It's going to be the CIA.
Could have done it, yeah. So the question would be, though, with there, so this transparency, people in the U.S. are pushing harder than ever. We want to be able to, like we're talking about, we're sick of everything being classified, even stuff that doesn't need to be classified is for some reason classified, and there's just no transparency. So we're pushing for that, and we are starting to see some inklings of releases or at least discussion within Congress about, you know, these sightings. Are we seeing anything around the world? I know in the Brazil, in Peru, in some places like that, there's been news stories of people seeing aliens, whatever it might be. But that's not, you know, it's, I feel like Mexico is the first time we're hearing another country maybe approaching it. I mean, are we seeing other any other countries?
No, not that, you know, not that I have seen. And you would think with Russia, Ukraine going on right now, there's 24/7 observation of what's going on there. It is a major war on Earth. If aliens were here, if another intelligent being was here to kind of prevent that stuff, they would have started, 9/11, stopping that kind of stuff from happening. Some people would say, well, no, they're just waiting for a nuclear war to start, and then they want to stop that. But if you were a more intelligent life form than we are as humans, you can predict what is going on with Russia, Ukraine. If it keeps going the trajectory it is, nuclear weapons will be used. Not the form that was used in Japan when the U.S. dropped bombs in Japan, but on the level of a tactical nuclear weapon. A nuclear weapon that would completely put Ukraine in the dark. It would destroy all of its infrastructure. That is how nuclear weapons would be used, Russia, Ukraine. If you have a more intelligent life force than we are, they would have already predicted that that's the outcome of this and tried to stop it.
But going back to kind of the original point, I mean, do you think there's even in itself could be a test just to see where we're pushing? I mean, because like you're saying, they're right now, there really doesn't look like there's a end in sight. Just kind of continues to, we throw money over there. You know, Russia's not making deals with like countries like North Korea. I mean, they've always been somewhat allied, but they're trying to get artillery shells from them.
Yep.
It's just this, you know, keeps unfolding. And even China wants to pretend like they're not involved, but they're involved. Could it also be a test in that type of situation as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it could be a test. That's a great point, because if they are more intelligent than we are, that's the test that they're looking for. Maybe they're waiting for a World War III to come about. You would have hoped that intelligent life force would have stopped us at World War II, but maybe that's where it began. Maybe they saw World War II and said, we can't let this happen again. Let's keep an eye on this planet and continue to focus on what they are doing. But since World War II, things haven't been great. And we've done plenty of other wars. We've dropped, you know, napalm in Vietnam. We destroyed the entire country of Iraq. We really did. The Taliban retake over of Afghanistan is troubling. These are all things that if you are a more intelligent life form, you want to prevent. And that's why I go back to my original statement of, if what's the goal, what's the end goal for that intelligence life form? Is it to, if it is to, you know, mine the resources that are on Earth, well, you've got to destroy human beings to do that. And that's what they would do. And so the fact that we haven't seen that yet is what prevents me from thinking we've been visited, at least right now. With other things, you know, if they're holding off because maybe they want to mate with the human race and then build a better, you know, a better intelligent race for Earth. I mean, that's got to start now.
Yeah.
It's just logically to me doesn't feel, unless it is just like, unless that's how religions were built.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that theory, and I am all for that, that theory. That's how religions were built. Because what does every religion have? It has a celestial being that has created everything, that has kind of pushed us forward, and we have to be in awe of. You know, if that's not God or a God, then it would be an intelligent alien life force. And I could definitely see that.
Like the example of Prometheus. I think that's, yeah. Well, let's bring it back to Earth a little bit.
Okay.
The the Prigozhin, I've been excited to talk about this. You know, is he dead? I think it pretty much confirmed that he's dead. I know I was going back and forth with some people in the comment section when I made the original post. Because if there's a guy that would fake his death in spectacular fashion, probably the guy. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, both the coup and him evidently being taken out. And what do you think that says for Russia currently and, you know, their military apparatus?
Well, so let's start with the last question. What does that mean for Russia and their military apparatus? It means Putin's in full control. I have not seen any evidence that it was for sure Russian military that sent a missile to that plane, blew it up, and killed Prigozhin. But everything is there that says it. He started a coup within Russia. That's a no-go for Putin, first of all. It was quickly stopped, which surprised, I mean, even myself. It was super surprising that he would go through all of that and then just agree to a ceasefire and move to Belarus. Now, I know a lot of his, a lot of the Wagner group is stationed out in Africa. That is their goal, is to be part of that Western Sahel, Niger, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, those countries, Mali. They want to be a part of those countries' counterterrorism operations to gain influence within the countries to get more money. So that's what Prigozhin was focused on. Then he got pulled away from that because of the invasion of Ukraine. And so the Wagner forces had to be the elite special forces within Ukraine, pushing back against the Ukrainian military. And they were doing well for a while. They kind of got pushed back up against the wall with the Ukrainians. And I think Putin was kind of disillusioned to the Wagner group. And so he wasn't providing the forces with weapons. He wasn't providing them with money.
Disillusioned in terms of he overthought their capabilities or just...
So Prigozhin oversold the capabilities. And so when they started to lose in Ukraine, Putin, I think, got the message that, hey, the Wagner forces aren't the ones to go with. Let's build up our own military forces with elite special forces personnel and go in and take back those areas of Ukraine. And so then he stopped sending money. He stopped sending support to the Wagner group. And it pissed Prigozhin off. He got very upset. And he started to become very vocal about it. So leading up to the coup, or the attempted coup, he was very vocal about how he did not like what Putin was doing. He did not like what Russian military forces were doing. He talked negatively about the lead generals within the Russian military. And then when he got no traction with that, he decided we're going to start a coup and we're going to try to take over. And they started to march to Moscow. It was very surprising. And I think he figured out very quickly that he was not going to take Moscow. And to me, it looked like maybe trying to put dents in the Putin armor so that he could then become the presidential candidate of Russia. He could then become the leader of Russia. He knew he wasn't in 2024 going to win a presidential election against Vladimir Putin. But 4 years after that, who's gonna win that election? I think he was really looking forward to the election after that to kind of set himself up as the new president of Russia.
Why do you think that he wouldn't have been able to take Moscow, though? Because at least from my perspective, I mean, it seemed like there was a lot of support for him on the ground. I mean, even some of the initial cities they overtook, they were basically just let right
in. Yeah, but in Moscow, it is Putin. And so anything Putin says, so Moscow and then St. Petersburg, those are the two main Putin strongholds. They were never going to make it to Moscow. It would have been even more difficult to make it to St. Petersburg. And I think as he got closer to Moscow, he realized this as checkpoints were starting to get put up. And then Putin started calling out, hey, you guys, you have every right to kill, you know, the Russian military, you have every right to kill Wagner forces if you have them in your ranks. And that kind of stopped Prigozhin. And so he stopped there and he decided to formulate a peace deal. Now, that one was said to have been done by Lukashenko in Belarus. I do think that was not smart by Lukashenko. And as Prigozhin sent his Wagner forces to Belarus as part of the agreement, he then goes to Africa. And I do think that Lukashenko, from the president of Belarus, Lukashenko, thought about it for a while and said, no, this isn't smart for me. And that's probably where conversations happened between him and Putin. And said, so my initial thought was that Prigozhin is setting up now to be the president of Belarus. And a lot of analysts thought that he could be the next president of Belarus. Well, the way to be the next president of Belarus, you've got to eliminate the current president of Belarus. And so in that theory, a conversation has to happen. A phone call has to happen. Lukashenko has to tell Putin, hey, I'm not comfortable with this agreement. We need to get rid of Prigozhin. I'm ready to do whatever you want. We're going to have... You want to put nukes in Belarus? You got them. And he agreed to that. That actually happened. He agreed to have nuclear weapons within Belarus. So now you're seeing Lukashenko tend to agree more with Putin. And that's what Russia's wanted. They wanted that Belarusian ally to continue to kind of put more focus on Ukraine and put Belarusian military forces on the border with Ukraine to tell them, hey, you're not done with just Russia. You're going to have more countries come in here if you keep fighting. And so they found an opportunity. Prigozhin's in Africa. He's got to come back, come to Moscow, have a conversation. At that point, he took off from Moscow to go to St. Petersburg to talk about more things. And the plane explodes, is what the Russian government has told us. It exploded.
Yep.
It is tragic. It's a Brazilian-made embargo. So with that, Brazil has said, hey, we want to kind of investigate. And Russia said, no investigation for you guys. So there's a lot of things that are happening that just let you suspect something happened. Something within the Russian military happened to explode that plane because Prigozhin was on it. Also, the founder of the Wagner forces was on there. So now you have a complete annihilation of the leadership of the Wagner forces. And that's just what Putin wants.
Do you know where they are currently? I mean, I know there's still some operations happening in Africa, and we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, so many people are, you know, there's always going to be debates on what's actually happening. So many people are saying, you know, they're going to disassemble and just be placed right into the Russian military. Other people think that, you know, Putin will put his own guy to lead Wagner. I mean, what's your viewpoint on that?
All right. So right now they are in Africa still. They're still fighting in Syria, and they have consolidated forces in Belarus. So the as far as satellite imagery has shown us, they are still building those Wagner bases within Belarus, and it's close to the border with Ukraine. And they want to kind of build that up to 50 to 100,000 forces so then it can push on and get into the invasion of Ukraine. I would say if it's still going, if the war is still going on, but we are in a protracted war. This war is going to take years because neither side is going to agree to a peace deal right now. So if all things stay the same, we're talking years. That gives enough time for Wagner forces to be trained in Belarus, to be increased in Belarus, and then a mix of Belarusian and Wagner forces would then be lined up on the border, ready to invade.
So they're basically, I mean, again, that was the theory too. All these always have like the craziest conspiracy theories behind them. They're saying it was all this super well-crafted plan by Putin to fake his death, and then they'll be able to invade from the north. But you see it more as just a general power grab, as Putin's getting rid of any of the... Do you think that there's going to be any other explosions happening to any of these other leaders?
I mean, yeah, definitely. So we saw it. It's kind of escalated, right? Because we saw falling downstairs, falling out of windows, destroying planes.
Yeah.
You know, what's the next thing? So Putin has taken a stand. If you talk against me within my government, you know, if you are within the military, if you are within the government and you're talking against me, I can show you some corpses that could make you think otherwise. And that's exactly what he's going for. He has an election coming up in 2024, and there is no way he's losing that election. And anyone who is trying to come up to be an adversary to him within the Russian government, they should be very scared about that.
What do the people in Russia think? Do you have any inkling of that? Because I know I talked to Mikhail Tiger, who's a journalist from Russia, and he talked about how there was a couple years there where people really started stepping away and saying, let's reevaluate. And then Ukraine happened, propaganda has been kicked into overdrive, and seems like it shifted. I mean, but again, we saw Prigozhin during the revolt, people were supporting him. So, I mean, what does it look like on the ground there?
So from what I've heard from different journalists, these are Russian journalists that live in America now and have talked to friends from elementary school, you know, college or whatever, people that they thought were educated enough to not go into the propaganda. He has talked to them, and they are all in on what's happening now. That doesn't mean that there's not 20% of the population that is fed up. They don't want to continue to be part of a war within Ukraine. They want to leave Ukraine alone. It's a 20%. It seems like a small group of people, but it's still fairly large when you're talking about millions of people within a country. But the typical Russian person it's not, oh, I'm just going to blindly believe, but that's what you talked about with the propaganda. It is constant. It is continuous that this is a special military operation. It's going to be over soon. Don't listen to the West. Don't listen to what the U.S. is doing. And they're very good at this. When we were in Poland, that is what was happening within the country of Poland. Their own news organizations were infiltrated by Russian propaganda to say that you think it's nice the Americans are here to protect you, but they're not. They're just here to steal your women, to steal your children, and they want to westernize your whole family. Don't you want to go back to the Soviet era? Now, a 50, 60-year-old man or woman would say, no, I don't want to go back to the Soviet era. I lived through it. I experienced it. It was not good. But what I saw while I was there was that the younger generation, who had no idea of the oppression of the Soviet Union, they tended to lean more towards that Russian propaganda because of what was there. It was, hey, the West has infiltrated Poland and made it a terrible country. But when your parents and your grandparents were coming up, Poland was this mighty, great Soviet country, and you should go back to that. And because they didn't experience it, a lot of them were on the side of the Soviet Union, and they do want that return to more Soviet era, a Soviet era economy, Soviet era military, because we can say whatever we want about the USSR, the Soviet Union, but it was a powerhouse during the Cold War. And talk about, if you wanted to talk about in the 80s, who were the top two intelligence agencies, it was the U.S. and Russia. Those were the top two. And that's what Putin wants to go back to. And so that's what the propaganda is going to continue to press, is that bring the Soviet Union back to what it was, make it a major player on the global level.
We've seen propaganda happening in the U.S. as well. I mean, there's some not great actors, we'll say, that are on Twitter and other environments that will say some pretty outlandish things. Or honestly, recently, and we can get into this, but it seems like everything that happens, there's some conspiracy behind it. Yeah. There doesn't even need to be a conspiracy about it, but there is. It seems like there has been this massive shift, most predominantly on the right, towards either Ukraine being a conspiracy or really looking down upon it. I mean, how do you view that? And how do you also see that, like, why that's developing?
Well, let's start with every conspiracy flourishes because it has some truth behind it. So the initial conspiracy was that Russia invaded Ukraine, first of all, because NATO was pushing on its border. That's correct. Poland is a NATO country. It's right on the border of Russia. So it's Russian and Belarus. So Kaliningrad is kind of in this little pocket with Poland. So that's true. NATO is on the border. Does that require you to invade another country? No. Another conspiracy is that Ukraine is infiltrated by Nazis. Is there truth behind that? There are pockets of pro-Nazi factions within Ukraine. A report that just came out that Canada, as Zelensky was there, they promoted this 90-year-old war hero that fought against the Russians. Well, who fought against the Russians while he was fighting? The Nazis. And he was a part of the most brutal Nazi group that ever existed. So there's truths in these conspiracies, but the reason that we still call it a conspiracy theory is because the rabbit hole that some of these accounts go down to vilify other people, like the Biden administration or the Pentagon or the U.S. as a whole, that's the fact that we are supporting Ukraine because of the conspiracy that we support Nazis is just untrue. The United States government is supporting Ukraine because Ukraine was invaded by an aggressor, and because we understand Vladimir Putin, and he's not stopping with Ukraine. So I was impressed with the kind of aid, and maybe some of the listeners would be upset with this. I was impressed with the kind of aid that we gave Ukraine. Because if we didn't give them anything, Russia's running roughshod over that entire country. They're getting into Kiev, they're taking it over, and then Moldova's next, and then Georgia. And then it just keeps going until Poland is attacked. And honestly, what Putin really wanted was to quickly go through Ukraine, and then let's start focusing on Finland and Sweden. because I want those, I want to bring, he said it in his speech. He said, I want to bring the Soviet Union back to its original glory. That includes Finland and Sweden. And they knew that they were in the crosshairs. And that's why they immediately went to NATO and asked for membership. So it was very impressive that the U.S. would do that. And it was only because if you don't do it now, you're going to spend a lot more money protecting Poland, Finland, Sweden, Germany. It's going to keep going because we have a narcissist in Russia who's not going to stop until he gets global, you know, world global domination or die. And that is where he's at right now. He is the cat in the corner, and it's at all cost. I want complete control of this globe.
We talked about this being a conflict that's going to go on for a couple of years, and pretty much every analyst I've seen agrees with that sentiment too, because it, you know, it's just how the nature of it's playing out. I guess from this is something many Americans would want to know, and also something that they probably need to come to grasp with, is that, is this just going to be a part of the balance sheet moving forward as well? Like, are we going to have to continue kind of paying for a lot of this because of what you're highlighting? Is there's no real end game here where we simply just stop providing the resources to help kind of battle back? Or is it kind of a hope that Russia eventually can't match our dollar?
That's the whole thing. So you're talking about two superpowers that are looking towards the future. And so they both have the same end goal, to make the other side weaker. Now, with Russia, they are definitely looking. So we are playing, we as the United States are definitely playing in Russia's hand, in that we are sending all of our, because when you're talking about how we are supporting Ukraine, it is mostly, the majority of it is through military equipment. So when you see the monetary values towards things, that's not the dollar amount. We're not adding $30 billion to the deficit because we sent Abram tanks to Ukraine. But we are sending those tanks to Ukraine, and they're going to get destroyed, and they're not going to be usable anymore. And now we have to backfill those tanks. And that's a problem because of something we haven't talked about yet. And that is China's focus on Taiwan. And Xi has said multiple times that reunification of Taiwan is his main goal as president. He has put that date right now at 2025. That means he's got to start building up troops in 2024. That means the U.S. as a military, who has said we will defend Taiwan and their sovereignty, we have now got to reestablish those pieces of military equipment. Now, I talked about the Abrams tanks. I'm not talking about those right now. I'm talking about Patriot missiles. I'm talking about Javelins. All these pieces of equipment that we are now losing because we're sending it out to Ukraine, we may not have in a war that's upcoming with China. And if that happens, And the way I see it breaking down is if China invades Taiwan, U.S. gets involved, then you're talking about North Korea, the wild card, my wild card of the geopolitics. They would get involved, and now you have all of these Indo-Pacific countries getting involved. At that point, China's going to call on Russia to help out. Xi is hoping Ukraine is already kind of completed, and Russia can focus some military to help those guys out. And so now we're fighting a world war again. We're talking about World War III, and we're not prepared for that. We are getting prepared. I can honestly tell you, as the U.S. military, we are getting prepared, and all we are focused on, I shouldn't say we, I'm not in it anymore, but all they are focused on is deterring China from even doing that in Taiwan. But the way to deter it is to increase your defenses up so much that they don't want to do it. Well, we're not doing that by sending all these missile systems to Ukraine. So that's a problem, and those are finite. They are going to stop. So we have to have a plan. And right now the U.S. plan is, so they, what they want is small, cheap, and mini, M-A-N-Y. They want platforms that are small. So swarm, drone swarms, that's a big thing. We can get into that if you want to talk about drone swarms. Cheap, they need to be made with our own resources that are cheap to manufacture because a lot of them are going to get destroyed. And we're going to have to send a lot more in a war with China. And then mini just follows on to that because you need to make a lot of them for a cheap amount. So that's what the U.S. is focused on because they see what China is. That's all China does. There's billions of people, and within the military, they have one of the largest as per, like, just people. They have the largest military, and they're going to be used for fodder. And so the U.S. does not have as many troops as China does. And so how are we going to defend Taiwan against those aggressive actions? How are we going to fight a world war against two of the top three superpowers in the world?
Are we the only one that's looking at this too? I mean, we need to address this situation.
I can tell you right now in my personal conversations with people, New Zealand is, that's what they're planning for. Australia, that's what they're planning for. What happened recently is the Philippines are getting in a lot of trouble because we're building U.S. military bases in the Philippines to protect against China. So all of these countries in the Indo-Pacific that... It's interesting. I want to say align with the U.S., but like New Zealand and Australia, they're aligned with China as far as economically. A lot of their trade happens through China. And so now they have to kind of sit back and say, do we care about that economic aspect of it? Or do we care about the sovereignty of our own country? Because we may be next.
Again, situationally, we're looking at a buildup to something I think we saw with Ukraine. I mean, there was all indications that he was going to invade, but we kind of got caught with our pants down, for lack of a better word. Again, we know 2025 is the year, but there doesn't seem to be urgency with the American populace, at least. And do you think that's manufactured, or do you think that's, again, just us playing politics and making the mistake of not actually... addressing this?
So what I like to say a lot is two things can be true at the same time. So two things are true. One, the American population, we have so much that we're dealing with domestically. And that's a lot of the concern with what we're doing with Ukraine. A lot of people see $30 billion package to Ukraine, think dollar bills, and say, why are my tax dollars paying for something that doesn't really affect me? Mind you, it does affect you. That's what we try to talk about a lot in the podcast, is how do these things affect you and why it's important to listen. But as far as that aspect of it, those are the arguments we're having. China's loving that's the argument that we have. Should we support Ukraine or should we worry about social issues within the United States? They would rather us focus about, well, they don't care. Send more money and weapons to Ukraine, or just focus on the social stuff. So when the conversations about China happen, hey, China could invade Taiwan, I think that political discussion then comes up. So I said two things can be true at the same time. The political discussion happens. We are in, right now, that we have the Republican debates that are happening right now. 2024 is going to be a huge election year for a lot of countries, but for the United States, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be wild. I'm going to sit back and make popcorn and watch all of this.
I'm not sure I'm ready for that, yeah.
But we discussed this recently on the podcast. Who does China want as the president of the United States? And in my analysis of it is, they don't care who's the president of the United States. They just care about how we are having conversations. And if we are distracted by the conversations about social issues or our pocketbooks, these are very important conversations to have. If we are focused on those, on the domestic issues, and not about what China's doing, that gives Xi an in to go in to Taiwan, because we don't want to worry about that. We saw that in World War II. We did not get involved until Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. Why? Because we were not affected by it. So unfortunately, if history repeats itself, that means it's going to take another attack on the U.S. homeland to get involved in one of these conflicts. That's scary. Those are not the conversations we should be having. We have to protect. I get it. We don't want to be the police force for the world. But we have to protect these other countries, or it's coming to us. And that's why I harp on Africa a lot. It's a country, It's a continent that I've been in a bunch of countries, and I have grown to love those countries and the people within those countries, and they love American people. So what's going on in Niger right now is that the French have just pulled out. They pulled all military forces out. The U.S. has decided to move all their troops from Niamey, the capital, to Agadez, where they built a multi-billion dollar Air Force base. It's what was called a drone base, so it's where UAVs would...
Can you explain why Niger is pretty important for the military, too? Because it was used a ton for, you know, operations in the Middle East and such, I know.
Definitely, yes. So, and this is Niger, Burkina Faso, that western, what I call the Western Sahel. So like I said, Niger, Nigeria, Chad, Burkina Faso. If you look at a map and look at that, these are hotbeds for terrorist activity because of the corruption that goes on in these countries. And so, so just explaining, watching the Nigerian military, and I did this in 2016, 2017. I watched the Nigerian military fight against Boko Haram, which is a terrorist organization. They're a terrorist organization. They're not a military. They had trucks, so Toyota Hiluxes with a 50 cal in the bed of the truck, and they made an entire tank unit of the Nigerian army retreat because the military wasn't getting paid. They did not have this patriotism for their country. They were born there. They lived there. They didn't care what happened. And so they retreated against it. That is what you're dealing with in Niger. And so I do see the Nigerian saying that, hey, the West has been in this country for so long, and what have you really accomplished? We have accomplished a lot. I can say I was there. We accomplished a lot in pushing back Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda and ISIS that started moving in. We did a lot with that, but the people weren't seeing that because their pocketbooks weren't seeing that. And that's really the focus. That's the focus of every human being. How does it affect my pocketbook? And it was affecting them negatively because they were still able to come in and be a terrorist group and control that country. So Niger is along the Lake Chad region. It's a hotbed for terrorist activity, and that is where a lot of terrorists are infiltrating into the country, and then they kind of move towards the west. They come in through Lake Chad, they start moving towards the west, and they get a stronghold within the country. Now remember, you're not looking at borders the same way that we see borders in North America, where we have like straight line, very much set in stone borders. A lot of times they don't have that. I tell this story a lot, how I just was in Burkina Faso and we're driving around and I just ended up in Mali all of a sudden. And we didn't know. And we started to keep driving and the driver goes, hey guys, we're in Mali right now. Where are we going? And we're like, well, we're not going that way. Let's keep going back this way. So that's how you see the borders there. So it's important because it is a large economy and there is a lot of people and a lot of good people there. And we don't want that country. We don't want Burkina Faso. We don't want Nigeria to be a hotbed for terrorist activity. Because if you look at a map and you go, well, Africa's so far from the U.S., why does it matter? Go look how close African countries are to Italy, to France, to Spain. If you start infiltrating that terrorist activity into those countries, and that is happening. You are getting terrorists into those countries to kind of embed into the culture, to be, you know, trying to be this, I'm a sleeper cell, and I'm going to wait here until I get my call. That is what we fear in the United States, and that's why it's important. Now, why is it important? Okay, it's still important for the U.S., but why is it important for China and Russia? For China, it's important because of resources. It has all the resources that they need to create cheap, high-functioning cell phones, you know, tablets, TVs, things like that. Cobalt, all those kind of minerals, those are in Africa. For Russia, it's very strategic. They want to build bases. Russia has the same mindset that the U.S. government has. It's a strategic mindset. We want to bring these forces in, and we want to be a part of these countries so that we, this is what Russia thinks, we can kind of promote our own sensibilities into the country, build a military base, and that is how we're going to attack. This is what Russia's saying. That's how we want to attack the West. If we build a military base in Africa, we are that much closer to attacking the West. And so now you have two countries, Russia and China, who work together. One is logistic and one is strategic. Or you could say China is strategic economically and Russia is strategic tactically and militarily. And that's why it's so important right now. And that's why it's sad to see France leave. There's a lot of talk about colonialization, and very true. Like, that's what France and the UK did. They went into Africa and they colonized all of those areas, and they should be put up to speak about those things. And they should say it was wrong, but that doesn't mean to move the entire military out. Whenever you have these terrorist organizations, that's all that they want. And what we saw, what satellite imagery showed, was that before these recent coups in Africa, Russia was there. The Wagner forces were there.
That's what I was about to ask.
Yeah, they were within each of those countries. And what they were doing was just a propaganda campaign. It was an information so you talk about information operations, IO, PSYOP. That's all that they were doing, so that they can get the West out and put their own forces in. And I can tell you personally that what a country like China does in African nations, how it's different from what the U.S. does, is China goes in, they mine all the resources out, and then that's it. They don't care anymore. They move out. What we did, so I can speak personally, what we did, we went in, built up infrastructure. I was a part of campaigns that built schools, that built orphanages, and that is the U.S. mindset. That's what we want to do. We don't want to just pull these resources without giving something else. China, as far as I saw on the ground in Africa, that is not what they're thinking. They are thinking cheap mining. It's basically slave labor from the population. They'll have them do all the work. Once it's done, there's no jobs for those guys anymore. They just move out and move on to the next country.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of proxy wars in Africa in the next decade?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's already starting. So Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger have already started a pact together to defend themselves from what... So the way that they framed it was, we want to start this organization so we can work on ourselves, which is great. If you want to work on your own security as your own country and you're doing a good job, I am all for that. But what's happening is they're saying, we want to do that without the West. And they are allowing China and Russia to infiltrate their ranks and to make those decisions for them.
Do you think that they're going to try taking those same circumstances? I mean, we're seeing... Again, Africa is very underreported a lot of the time, especially in the U.S., but there's just cracks happening all over the country there. Do we also see that Russia and China are utilizing, you highlighted the colonialist mindset that, you know, is pretty prevalent there. And not that it's not without reason, but in a lot of ways, it can be really pushed and hampered. And so the things that maybe we're doing positive there, those don't ever show up. It's all negative.
It's all propaganda. I think after 2020, it was like a 500% increase on news within African countries about colonialization. So that increase came because we, as the United States, removed ourselves away, but Russia put more forces there, and they started to infiltrate more propaganda into those African countries. And it goes back to the conspiracy theory talk. Why are conspiracy theories prevalent? Because they have some truth to it. It's propaganda. Propaganda is prevalent because there is some truth to it. Colonialization is true. France, the UK, the US, all of those Western countries, years ago, went out to India, the African continent, all these other locations, and colonized it. And for better or for worse, that's where that country is now. And now they have to reevaluate what is going, because, and I've been out to Kenya, that's a United Kingdom colony, or it was. And you can see that focus in there. So I've been to the Western Sahel, where it's more French involvement, and then the UK on the east side, where it's more, or on the east side of Africa, where it's more UK involvement, and it's totally different cultures in there. And it's because of colonialization. And some of those people are tired of it, rightfully so. But they're not going to improve because they're allowing China and Russia in. So that's where I stand with that. There's no improvement because you're going to allow these other nations to come in.
Do you think it's problematic that it doesn't seem like many in the U.S. want to also... And a lot of, like Siddharth Kaur, we talked about the Congo, how if we can put resources in this nation and really formulate a plan of like how we're going to help assure whether they're being paid properly, whether that the infrastructure being built, but there just doesn't seem to be, not to say people don't care in the West, they're just not acknowledging that situation. I mean, do you think that's something that we really need to kind of ramp up before, not to say that we lose Africa, but this place explodes into something that we no longer can kind of handle?
Yeah, I think so we talk about it all the time on the podcast. Africa to me is one of the most important regions in the world right now because of the resources. So if you're going to say that you're going to defend Taiwan, you say you're going to defend Taiwan because of the resources that are there. That's why China wants to reunify with Taiwan. The same has to be said for Africa. It's a much larger continent, way more resources. They have way more issues and problems. There's corrupt governments. There's bad economies. And so I think people in the West kind of say, yeah, well, they're dealing with their issues, but so are we. And so we're so personalized, even in this globalization that we have with Twitter, with all the social medias, like you can talk to someone from Africa right now. 1850, that was not the case. 1950, that was probably not the case. You could not personally discuss something with someone from Africa immediately. And so we've all changed. You can direct message an African politician if you wanted to. That's how this globe has changed. But with the problem with inflation, with supply chain issues, we've become more localized. And so our problems, personally, my problems are more important than anyone else's problems. And that's what I want the government to focus on. That's what most people in the West think, is my problems are important, focus on them. Without actually, it's an information problem, because that type of person isn't viewing what's going on with Africa as, oh, that could be a me issue as well. But if we go back to supply chain issues, we go back to how are you able to contact someone from Africa? Well, you use your phone. All those pieces in that phone came from different countries, and most of those countries are in Africa. And so it is very important that the African continent is stable and that those economies get better so that we can continue to advance technologically because of the resources that are in there. And we shouldn't go in there and just start mining resources and destroy countries because we think we know better. We have got to go in. We've got to mine the resources in sort of a conservative level. We can't destroy a whole country because of it. And then we've also got to figure out ways to stop doing that. And I think that's something that a controversial figure like Elon Musk, I think he wants to do that. I think his ultimate goal is to go to Mars because we're destroying this planet and we need to live somewhere else. But there are resources on other planets that we have not identified yet that could help us. And there are billionaires that are looking to go to those planets because they want more money. And how do you get more money? Pull those resources from those planets and create something new. That's how you're going to get money. And so the problem is we're so focused on ourselves and not what's going on a continent like Africa that's destroying the country or destroying each country on the continent. And it's going to lead us to have to go and pull resources from an asteroid. I mean, how many millions of taxpayer dollars was used for NASA to pull resources from an asteroid? For what? We have no idea.
So getting into another country that I think that we really need to address, and I was excited that you brought this point up, that we need someone to be attacking, or China to be attacking us, to even consider maybe going into that full-scale warfare.
It's unfortunate.
In my opinion, I think they already are attacking us, and it would be the fentanyl crisis.
Yep.
109,000 people passed away just last year alone. The number's only going to go up. You know, it seems no matter what we do with these cartels, how aggressive the U.S. operations are to an extent, the problem's never getting solved. And it seems like China recognizes this and sees there's never been a better opportunity to flood our southern border. So can you speak to that a little bit and how we've seen this kind of start to develop?
Yeah, I mean, this has been going on for multiple decades. When I was leading up to my first deployment in Iraq, we had a sit down with the FBI. And so we were at Fort Hood in Texas, so it's kind of close to the Mexican border. So unprovoked, they kind of gave us a briefing on what's going on at the border. This is, you know, 2004 timeframe, so that's almost 20 years ago. And what they said was, at that point, it was terrorist organizations that were pushing young 20-year-old males through the border to infiltrate those areas for, you know, a terrorist attack. That has changed now. The new border crossing is exactly what you were talking about. And it's fentanyl, it's human trafficking, the trafficking of young kids into the United States. It's terrible. Something has to be done at the border. We're done with this, oh, it's a migrant crisis. No, it's a drug crisis. It's a human trafficking crisis. It's a conversation I had with a friend of ours who his Instagram account is Rickonomics, but he's Colombian. So he's from Colombia, South America. And he's also a former intelligence analyst within the U.S. military. And he's kind of analyzed what was going on. It started within the forests in Colombia, and that was started with the Chinese. They came in, they started to infiltrate a product in fentanyl. They started to infiltrate a product in humans, and they paid the cartels to push all of that through the southern border of the United States through Mexico. And so it's tough. Like you said it right. Are we already at a war with China because they're pushing fentanyl through? I would push back a little bit against that because it's still a personal decision that needs to be made. unless you are seeing people getting force-fed fentanyl and killed. And we have seen that in some occasions, but those are very small. A lot of times people are just choosing this. It's much like, when alcohol was banned, right? And as we're leading up, so alcohol was banned, and then they started to reform that and say, well, we made a mistake. Let's stop that. Let's make alcohol legal again. Well, what did that start? So that's how you got Al Capone. That's how you got the mob. They started infiltrating heroin, other types of drugs. So is the problem that we have made in places like California, we've made high-level drugs legal to use, and now you're seeing gangs and mobs saying, we need to find something else that's harder that we can make more money on. Well, that would be fentanyl. Listen, the 80s, we started the drug war. We've lost the drug war. We definitely, as the United States, we lost the drug war. So we can't go and look back at that and say, how do we attack it? We have to do something about the border. Something has to be done. It's not, we have to stop people looking for freedom from crossing the border, but we have to stop. We have to, as the intelligence community should be at the forefront of this in identifying the bad actors and not letting them come across. That is exactly what should be happening. And Border Control has an intelligence department. I don't know that they're using it correctly because they're not identifying who the bad actors are. They're not identifying new ways to get drugs in so that Border Control can identify it quickly and then stop all of that from coming across the border.
Does it worry you that it seems like the administration and a lot of people around the topic want to just play politics and pretend either the problem's not real, it's not as bad as you say it is, or that, you know, measures that we take here will solve the problem, even though it's not even doing anything?
Politics always pisses me off. Whenever we're talking about people and doing the right thing for people, politics pisses me off because politicians don't care about you. I mean, you can broadcast this all over the place. I'll say it again. If you are a Biden forever person, Biden has not thought about you whatsoever. If you are a forever Trumper, Donald Trump has, even if he's shaking your hand, he does not care about you. Ron DeSantis does not care about you. They only care about what puts them in power. And then once in power, they want to do everything in their power to keep that because it means more money, more power, more influence, more money. So bringing politics into it is the wrong way to do it on the border. That was the same for Trump whenever he just said, hey, we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. Well, that's not going to happen. Anybody who had a logical thinking brain knew Mexico's not paying for the wall. And then you have to go through hoops to go, well, yeah, they did pay for it because we put tariffs on them. No. We as taxpayers paid for the wall in the 50 miles that were put up to there. Do we need a fence? Do we need a wall? I mean, we have a southern border. We are supposed to protect that border. Those border towns, they are not good right now. That's across the board. I know Texas is sending migrants up to New York, Chicago, all over the place, but it's not just Texas. And this isn't just today. Like, it's not a 2023 issue. When I was at my advanced individual training at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, which is a border town with Mexico, we were not able to go any further south from Fort Huachuca because it was dangerous. This was 2003. We had a migrant crisis. This is the Bush administration. We had a migrant crisis. We had our FTX, which is field training exercise, canceled because a group, we had what we call rubber duckies, which is just rubber M16s that we carry around because it's just training. we were in a, this group was in a formation with their rubber duckies doing their field training exercise, and they were attacked by a group of migrants along the southern border. Now, I put up my quotes, migrants, because it was actually part of the cartel just trying to get drugs across. But they saw people in uniform with what looked like M16s, and they attacked. And so that group, on their field training exercise, so advanced individual training, you're not in the Army. You are training to get your job so that you can go to the Army. So you're talking about not the highest trained individuals as far as being able to protect themselves. And they just had to completely leave these mountains that we would do our field training exercise in because there was a group of migrants that had crossed and had weapons and were attacking and were firing back. No one was injured, thankfully. But we had to cancel that. So this has been a crisis for a long time. And that the fact that some people within the U.S. government do not think that it's an issue is concerning.
Would you designate the cartel groups as a terrorist organization?
Yeah, so are the cartels terrorists? Yes. The cartels, though, have to be, and I'll bring Ricky back up into this because he has a lot more knowledge than I do on the cartels. What is going on now within the U.S. government in that there are some politicians that want to invade Mexico to deal with the cartels, that's not going to be successful. It's because of the way the cartels work. We have, because of the country that we are a melting pot. I think people forget about this. They call America this such racist country, but there's so many different personalities, there's so many different races and cultures within this country. So you have a large faction of the U.S. military that is Hispanic. And for good reason, they bring a lot to the table as far as the military is concerned. But it's also a fact that the cartel can use some of those troops, families, against them. So the cartel is not going to go after you, the individual, because what if, and I'll put me into this, if I was going after the cartel and they rolled me up and they, you know, did whatever they want to interrogate or do anything, I don't care. I would die. I don't care. But if my family got involved, if it wasn't me, but my family was kidnapped and interrogated and tortured, that's going to be very concerning to me. And I would hope that I would stop everything and try to find them and bring them back. But a lot of people would get the note from the cartel that we have your family, and they would lay down arms. Give me my family back. I'm done with this. And that's how the cartel's going to work. If there's a large faction in the U.S. politicians who want to invade Mexico to go after the cartels. And that's what the cartel's going to do. They are going to pinpoint various troops that are going into Mexico, and they're going to attack their family. How do they do that? We talked about the border crisis. They are putting people through the border that can then embed with those families. And so if something happens and they need to, they can kidnap those families and bring them into Mexico. And it's dangerous. So I think the cartels are a terrorist organization. I don't have an answer for what to do about that because it's so close to our home.
I mean, part of the problem, are you familiar with Ed Calderon?
Yep.
Yeah, so he's awesome, security expert, worked down in Tijuana, and you know, the stories and perspective he's seen, crazy. But he's talked about how the U.S. is being infiltrated. When I spoke with Juan Grillo, he said the same thing. And not only infiltrated in the sense that cartels are starting to pop up like gangs, they're starting to get political influence in these local communities, whether they're, you know, related to somebody that's within the mayor, the city, whatever it might be. They're really starting to kind of roll the ball on that. Part of the idea would be if we go down and invade, you can kick it out. But then we're going to look at, and how you're highlighting, almost a crisis like we had in the Middle East, where we're going to see a nation not only fall apart, but a lot of attacks back home, a lot of issues back home. And then if we let this situation continue to kind of play on, we're going to have a narco state forming. We're going to have further and further escalation in terms of the levels of power they're gaining in the U.S. I mean, what is something that we need to be doing right now, whether that's politically, you know, policy that we can put forward, or militarily, how we should actually arm the border?
Well, we got to defend our own country. So, yeah, should troops be on the border? Listen, we have a National Guard. That's exactly what the National Guard is for, is to protect the state. Now, you can put federal orders on those troops and send them overseas, or you can keep them localized to the state and put them on the border. If you think of Texas, who has a larger National Guard than Texas? And then from a state size, California is one of the largest states in America. And so they have the population to patrol that border. And we're just not seeing it right now. It's just one side. The one side will say build a wall, and the other side will say let's be compassionate and let everyone through. And no one is worried about, you know, the repercussions of either one of those. And I think if we just secure the border in a logical way, it makes sense that we can stop the hundreds of thousands of people who are coming over, which 50% of that are just families trying to be free, trying to find freedom. It's also a problem that South America is not very, you know, South America, Latin America, Central America, not very stable right now. So yeah, you have a ton of people who want to come to the United States because we are the free nation. We are, you know, the what Reagan called the shining light on a hill, the beacon that invites everyone over. So if we are that beacon of freedom, of course, if your country is going through destabilization, that's where you want to be. It's the same for Europe. That's the crisis that Europe's going through, because Northern Africa and the Middle East is so volatile. And so there's a huge migrant crisis that's going there. So without putting our own hands into those crises in different countries, we just have to secure our border. Now, it would be a lot better if those countries become more stable and they become a functioning democracy, so that people don't say, I have to go to the United States to actually survive and live a good life. Before and until that happens, we have to secure it. I don't think a wall will do that. I think that's not cost effective. I think putting troops there, you know, backing up Border Patrol, putting more investment into Border Patrol, allowing Border Patrol to do their job. A lot of times we don't let Border Patrol do their job. We say, hey, you're handcuffed with a lot of things. You just have to let these people over. If we just let them do their job, it's going to be a lot better for us as a society. And we can then focus on the people who need to be here for protection and security. And then for the people that are looking for a better life, truly looking for a better life, welcome to America. Let's be the America that you walked. These people, I mean, some of these people walked from Colombia all the way through Mexico, walked into the United States. Let's shake their hands, invite them into these families into this country, and have them being functional citizens within this country. They just want freedom. This is what this nation was founded on. And so if we're going to have the conversation of we can't let what some people would say lesser people into this country, I don't accept that. I don't. I think you have to, the way this country was built, you have to allow people looking for safety and security into this country. And if they want to be functioning citizens within this country, then you guide them along that path.
I couldn't agree more. And it's a crazy world. I can't believe we're getting close to 2024. It's It's going to be a crazy
2024 is going to be the wildest year. I mean, if you thought 2020 was crazy, or each year after that, I know we talk about it all the time. I'm like, man, 2023 is a crazy year. 2024 is going to just be absolutely wild. I'm doing analysis on it right now. I don't know where we're going to end up. There's a lot of sort of roots in different directions, like different branches of what could happen. And it's going to be wild. There's a good way to go, and there's like 100 bad ways to go.
It's like the Marvel movie, the Endgame, where there's 1 in 7 million chance. So yep. Hopefully we hit it. I don't know if we're going to, but
oh man,
we'll have to get you on for, I'm going to be doing an election night podcast with a buddy on the Cove Network. So we'll set up for that for sure.
I mean,
we'll definitely get you on before that as well. But yeah, I don't know where it's all going to go, but at least the bright side for us is we'll be able to talk about it. So yeah, there's that.
As long as that's what's great, I keep talking about what's great about this country. We can talk about it.
Yeah.
So say what you want about the politics and getting canceled and everything. But if you are do it yourself, if you're an independent podcast, you know, journalism, things like that, you can say what you want. You know, YouTube might cancel you, X, Twitter, you know, Instagram might cancel you, but be independent. You can say what you want. And I think that is good. I think we have to have the conversations. If we're not allowed to have the conversations, then we're on the wrong path.
Well, Cover, my man, I always appreciate you coming on. It was another great episode, and obviously we're going to be doing another one here soon. Finally in person, which, you know, we've been talking about that for months, and I'm glad we were finally able to do it.
Definitely.
If you want to let everyone know where to find, you know, different social media sites, your guys' podcast as well.
Yeah, so Instagram is at Aucoin Analytics. That's AucoinAlytics. I think I got that right. I might have missed some of those. But Aucoin Analytics on Instagram. We also do This Week Explained. So it's like one sentence. This Week Explained on everywhere you get podcasts. You can go on Spotify, Apple, search This Week Explained. And we're just trying to put information out there. I think what Mike Baker said was true, that he who holds the best information holds the keys to success for the future. And so that's a podcast like you're listening to right now. That's what we're just trying to put out, is the right information, good information to help you become successful in the off chance that things go south. So just wherever you get your podcast, please go on to This Week Explained. We're coming up on our 2-year anniversary. 2 years doing a podcast. I would have never thought that. So if you're listening to this, I do think this is a great podcast to follow on to This Week Explained. I think you should be listening to both of those to get the right proper information.
Couldn't agree more. Extremely informative podcast. You guys have heard me talk about in the past. Everything will be linked below, whether it's the social media sites or the podcast on Apple Music and Spotify. Also, leave them a 5-star review. That goes a long way. So
it does.
Love to help that out as well. And yeah, with that, Curvin, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, man. When I was young.